Okay, you know how we're going to start? We're going to start by turning on that clicker and then go to Titus 2, verse 14. That's kind of the theme verse for this quarter. We want to do two things. We want to be able to put that to memory, but I want to also to be able to understand and analyze really the point that it's trying to make. And so we're going to do that at the beginning and maybe the end of every class. So let's recite Titus 2, verse 14 again together. Who gave himself for us that he might redeem us from every lawless deed and purify for himself his own special people, zealous for good works. That was one of the purposes of Christ. Didn't just end with redeem us. He might redeem us so that these other things might be accomplished, that we might be his special, his unique people, his unique possession, and that we might be zealous for good works. This is what God expects of all of his children, remember, not just the chosen few. And that's one thing very early on that I want us to get out of this, that the idea of being people zealous for good works is not this elite status of Christian, that this belongs to all of us. Now, he makes the point in the book about an incident in 1 Kings. So let's turn to 1 Kings 18, verse 17. And I thought this would be worthy of our time tonight to look at this incident. It's a well-known incident, but I want us to look at it again. When we make a distinction, as he does in the book, between immature zeal and mature zeal. Somebody give us a kind of a distinction, an idea of the difference between immature and mature zeal. What would be maybe some examples of immature zeal, or what would be some thoughts when you think of somebody that has an immature zeal? Okay, maybe misguided and going in the wrong direction. Paul talked about his Jewish brethren in the flesh, that they had a zeal for God, but not according to knowledge. And so we could be immature, we could be zealous, but going in the wrong direction, doing the wrong things. Some other thoughts about immature versus mature zeal?
Maybe only doing the fun stuff and not all the things that God requires of us.
Okay, we might pick and choose the things that we like that would be exciting to us, and we'd be zealous for those things. That certainly would be a mark of immaturity, of just doing what interests us and empowers us.
They're excited about doing things, but don't know why they're doing it.
Okay, yeah, there's that lack of knowledge. Excited about it, but don't really understand how this fits into the big picture and how this fits into our service to God. An illustration, a contrast is seen in this incident of Elijah at Mount Carmel. And I want to take the time to read it because it does very well define this immature versus mature zeal. And then we'll make some comments about this. 1 Kings 18, let's start in verse 17 where it says, "Then it happened, when Ahab saw Elijah, that Ahab said to him, 'Is that you, O troubler of Israel?' And he answered, 'I have not troubled Israel, but you and your father's house have, in that you have forsaken the commandments of the Lord and have followed the Baals. Now therefore, send and gather all Israel to me on Mount Carmel, the 450 prophets of Baal and the 400 prophets of Asherah who eat at Jezebel's table.' So Ahab sent for all the children of Israel, gathered the prophets together on Mount Carmel, and Elijah came to all the people and said, 'How long will you falter between two opinions? If the Lord is God, follow him. But if Baal, then follow him.' But the people answered him not a word. Then Elijah said to the people, 'I alone am left the prophet of the Lord, but Baal's prophets are 450 men. Therefore, let them give us two bulls, and let them choose one bull for themselves, cut it in pieces, lay it on the wood, and put no fire under it, And I'll prepare the other bull and lay it on the wood, but put no fire under it. Then you call on the name of your gods, and I'll call on the name of the Lord. And the God who answers by fire, he is God. So all the people answered and said, "It is well spoken." Now Elijah said to the prophets of Baal, "Choose one bull for yourselves and prepare it first, for you are many. And call on the name of your God, but put no fire under it." So they took the bull which was given them, and they prepared it, and called on the name of Baal from morning even till noon, saying, "O Baal, hear us." But there was no voice, no one answered, and they leaped about the altar which they had made. And so it was at noon that Elijah mocked them and said, "Cry aloud, for he is a god. Either he is meditating, or he's busy, or he's on a journey, or perhaps he's sleeping and must be awakened." So they cried aloud and cut themselves, as was their custom, with knives and lances, until the blood gushed out on them. And it was so, when midday was past, that they prophesied until the time of the offering of the evening sacrifice. But there were no voice. No one answered, and no one paid attention. Then Elijah said to all the people, "Come near to me." So all the people came near to him, and he repaired the altar of the Lord that was broken down. And Elijah took 12 stones, according to the number of the tribes of the sons of Jacob, to whom the word of the Lord had come, saying, "Israel shall be your name." Then with the stones he built an altar in the name of the Lord, and he made a trench around the altar large enough to hold 2 seahs of seed. And he put the wood in order, cut the bull in pieces, and laid it on the wood, and said, "Fill 4 water pots with water, and pour it on the burnt offering and on the wood." Then he said, "Do it a second time." And they did it a second time, and he said, "Do it a third time." And they did it a third time. So the water ran all around the altar, and he also filled the trench with water. It came to pass at the time of the offering of the evening sacrifice that Elijah the prophet came near and said, "Lord God of Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, let it be known this day that you are God in Israel, and that I am your servant, and I've done all these things at your word. Hear me, O Lord, hear me, that this people may know that you are the Lord God, and that you have turned their hearts back to you again." Then the fire of the Lord fell and consumed the burnt sacrifice, and the wood and the stones and the dust, and it licked up the water that was in the trench. Now when all the people saw it, they fell on their faces, and they said, "The Lord, He is God. The Lord, He is God." Famous story for several reasons. One, it demonstrates, of course, the power of God. It contrasts that needed to be made in that day between the false gods and the true God. But I think it's a well-known and loved story just because it's almost funny, isn't it? I mean, it's certainly tragic, but there's almost some humor involved here. At these people who are just crying out, yelling to their God, and time goes on and goes on, and they just keep crying out, and they start cutting themselves, trying to get their God's attention. And there's Elijah. You can just almost see him just sitting over there watching this. And then he begins to just jab at him a little bit, doesn't he? Well, maybe he's asleep. Wake him up. Maybe he's on a trip. And you just can almost just see the anger maybe seething in them. And then he starts on his sacrifice. And although it's not explicitly stated in the text, I can almost see him just kind of calmly going about that. As opposed to their frantic yelling. It says they were running around, they were yelling, they were screaming loudly, cutting themselves. You can just almost just see Elijah, maybe intentionally so, just calmly taking that stones and slowly putting it in place, getting it just right, and giving the orders and just kind of calmly going about his business. And again, it's not explicitly stated. The only thing that is said that they shouted, and it simply says that Elijah said. Now, we don't know what volume he said it, but can you almost imagine he maybe intentionally even lowered the normal volume of his voice when he spoke to God to show the contrast between their yelling and shouting? You got to yell louder to wake up your gods. I can almost imagine Elijah saying, "Lord God, you're the God of Abraham, you know, just calmly, quietly saying that. And we see obviously a contrast between God and Baal, the false gods. But the author of our workbook points out the difference, the contrast we've seen between the immature and mature zeal. The immature zeal, of course, upon the servants of Baal, and mature zeal on the contrast to the prophet of God, Elijah. What do you see in this that you could characterize in regard to the prophets and the servants of Baal that you could list as being immature in their zeal? What are some things that they did that you would say that showed some immaturity on their part?
Cutting themselves.
Yeah, this idea of it says that was their custom. We don't know where they got that. Obviously, Baal didn't tell them to do that. But they had gotten that somewhere that would get their God's attention somehow. I don't know if it followed from the shedding of blood in a other sacrifice. We know that many times these false gods were served by human sacrifices, their own children and others that they would serve. And so maybe it was some of that. Maybe it was just the thought, if we hurt ourselves and our cries from that will cause this God to listen. So yeah, that certainly showed immaturity on their part. I mean, you can't deny that takes zeal, doesn't it? That somebody's committed, somebody that's on fire for their God to be able to do that, to just intentionally cut yourself and to inflict that. It said to the extent that blood was just gushing out, pouring out on them. So this wasn't just, you know, testing your blood sugar, pricking your finger a little bit. This was actually, you know, cutting and gushing of the blood. So zeal, no doubt. What's something else, Pat?
We don't have to work ourselves into a frenzy to communicate with God.
Okay. What we'll call the frenzied worship. Kind of hard to see that and not maybe make some connection to modern day religion today, but even some so-called Christian religion, that the idea that more activity either pleases God or this, the more activity demonstrates, and I think this maybe is more at the root of this, it demonstrates more my love for God. The more activity that I can show. And by the way, I don't want to get too sidetracked off on worship here. We're talking about zeal, but this is a complete misnomer. And sometimes we're in churches of Christ are made fun of ourselves by being so quiet. Our worship services don't even come close to the decibel level of others. And that decibel level is rising among our religious friends and neighbors as it gets more and more friends. And this, the idea is that we're just dead. That we're just lifeless. If you don't emotion, you don't have any, you're not on fire for God. You don't love God. You know, if you did, you'd do that. But look at the contrast here between Elijah. Can anybody deny that Elijah was on fire, no pun intended, but on fire for God, that he had zeal? But you can just see Elijah just going about this methodically in order. And the idea that emotion has to be expressed one way for it to be true emotion. Quiet meditation, quiet singing can be full of emotion, can be full of dedication and devotion to God. It doesn't have to be a rock concert environment for my heart to be connected into that. That's simply just a misconception, misunderstanding of the whole idea. And so, yeah, this immaturity of this frenzied yelling, thinking that, and Elijah was, what was funny, one thing that is funny about this is that Elijah's mocking them for that, and they just do it. They get louder. And Elijah's just saying, yeah, yell louder. Maybe your God can't hear you. for this. And again, there's a powerful lesson there, I think, in this. Can God not hear? I'm not saying that we should try to make our singing as quiet as we can, all those things. But can God not hear quiet singing? Can God not hear the heart meditating upon death and suffering of Christ during the Lord's Supper? This misnomer that it's got to be loud and frenzied. It's just that. It's a misnomer. What else do you see in this story of the prophets and servants of Baal that showed zeal, but an immature zeal?
Along with the frenzied worship, the wording, it says they called out to Baal. Elijah said, you know, made you sleep, things you just talked about in this frenzied worship. And it says, and they cried aloud. So the word there seems to me, they kicked it up a notch like you just talked about. So it may have been a sign of immaturity there. They took the bait.
Yeah, of just the whole, I don't know, gullibility of the idea of here, this loud screaming, that they didn't really know how to serve. And it kind of makes sense, to be fair to them. You wouldn't know how to serve a false god, because again, that God hadn't, like the true God, had laid out how to be worshipped. But Baal had never given them a list of things to do, and so that shows the immaturity there of just the gullibility of, sure, oh, okay, yeah, we'll try that, we'll do that.
Sometimes we let ourselves get pulled into those foolish questions that Paul talked about.
Yeah.
So kind of what I was thinking about here, that he taunted them a little bit, and you know, they took that. We sometimes let folks do that to us as well.
Yeah, and we just fall into the category of just caviling, and there's nothing to be accomplished by that.
It was their short-sightedness of agreeing to the challenge to start with. Why did they think that their God could do this?
Yes.
He'd never done anything for them before.
Yeah, the foolishness and maybe the gullibility. I thought about that too. Why would you even agree to this? To, you know, hey, let's have this contest. And you put this bull upon the altar, and whichever God sends fire from heaven. Now, Elijah had confidence that his God could do this. God had demonstrated just in the chapter prior to this that he could perform miracles and do those kind of things. So Elijah, not in a cocky way, but he had a confidence, a little swagger to him that God, my God can do this. But why in the world, if you're a prophet of Baal, would you even accept that challenge? What had ever given you the idea that your Baal could do that? I think of the taunts of Elijah here, the taunts of Isaiah, when Israel themselves was following after these false gods, and talking about how ridiculous it is that you'll go out here into the woods, and you'll cut down a tree, and you'll carve it in, and you'll have to haul it back, carve it into an image, and then bow down and say, that God made me, when really, we made that God. If anybody should be bowing, that image should be bowing down to me, because I created it. You know, I made it. I brought it into existence. I feed and sustain it. So if there's any worshiping ought to be done, this idol ought to worship us, because we're its makers. But this, the ridiculousness of falling down and worshiping something that you yourself made, and just the silliness of, where did they think this was going to go? Did they really think? Was it obvious that there was no evidence that their gods could do these kind of things? And just the gullibility, really, in first just accepting the challenge. Okay, yeah, we'll accept that.
I don't think they ever probably really gave it any thought, reasoned about that somebody just had the idea of let's make a statue, and they never really sit down and thought about what reason can this actually have any power, fall in the crowd, so to speak.
And that's at the root of immaturity, isn't it? And we could do a whole series of sermons on that, couldn't we? Of the idea of how that is, that sums up the religious world, doesn't it? Of just not thinking about the challenge, not thinking about that this was going to work, and that none of it was thought out.
Well,
And so much of religion, and even what is called Christianity today, is that. That it hasn't been thought out. We just bought this bill of goods. We believed, oh, that's the way we worship God. That's the way we show our love for God. That's the way it's done. Without any real evidence for that. Without any real scripture to back that up. Now, Elijah had miracle, evidential miracle proof. We have scriptural proof for the things that we ought to. And to just say, wait a minute, where's the proof for that? You know, without thinking that out in contrast to this. Deidre, do you know?
I'm just thinking of the strength and numbers mentality, crowd mentality. But it kind of goes along with that not thought out. They just think if that many people are involved, it's got to be good.
Oh, yeah, yeah. There may be that crowd or that mob mentality that is there. All right, well, let's look at Elijah. What? Oh, I'm sorry, Ron.
Can we sum all of that up and say that it's the one word that God uses all the time? My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge.
For a lack of knowledge, just like Paul said of the Jews, they're zealous,
right,
but without knowledge. And that zeal gets them nowhere. Again, we think about, use the illustration of maturity and immaturity. Think about a young child. How much energy does a young child expend in a day? But to what goal? What end? What have they accomplished? You know, do you ever look at the family? Is it the Family Circus? Family Circus cartoon that showed the little boy's route home from school. You know, and there's the line that goes all over the neighborhood when he was just going from the bus to home. But his route was that. You think about a child, just how much energy is expended, but didn't really get anything accomplished. And that's fine. It's a child. We expect immaturity out of a child. But maturity requires that knowledge. I think about in the work environment, that there's a saying that work smarter, not harder. You don't have to always just do more activity. Sometimes you can work smarter and channel that energy in that. And that's what we see in Elijah. What are some things that we see in Elijah that demonstrate mature zeal? Now, before we start making that list, understand that this is not a contrast. This is not a study in a contrast between zeal and no zeal. And if we get nothing else out of this class tonight, I want us to get that. Sometimes we can look at our religious friends and neighbors that are doing things that would kind of fall in this category, and we can might say, well, boy, they're zeal. They're zealous. They're on fire for the Lord. And we might look at ourselves and say, yeah, we're just kind of dead and lifeless. And we may be, but it's not because we're not doing those things. Elijah, just try to picture in your mind the contrast between these numbers and all of this frenzied activity, the noise, the cutting themselves, the screaming. And Elijah's just quietly working again. We're not told explicitly, but I can just almost imagine he's over here by himself with a few men that are helping him, and they're just slowly going about their business. This is not a contrast between zeal and no zeal. It's a contrast between immature zeal and mature zeal. All of this activity may have looked like zeal, but it didn't accomplish anything. What are some things that demonstrated zeal on Elijah's part? Okay, there was definitely proof. Evidence. We just carry that out and maybe several. The knowledge. This not thought out, the immaturity of just accepting the challenge to begin with. Elijah knew. He knew that he was in the right path. He knew that what he was doing was right. He knew that God would answer his call and that God would demonstrate his power on this mountain. What else?
He prepared the altar and the sacrifice according to God's law.
Okay. He did it the right way. That's the idea of mature zeal. Now, again, if we're contrasting zeal and no zeal, it would be all of this, and then if Elijah just did nothing. But Elijah didn't do nothing. He did something, but he did it the right way. He prepared an altar. That was what God had prescribed, how he would be served, with a bull and an altar. And these things were the things that God had prescribed and God had asked for. Again, had Baal asked for any of these things? No, he hadn't. There was no prescription here. There was no law laid down by Baal. Everything they did, they either thought it up or somebody else did, some other human being did, and said, this is the way we're going to serve Baal. And a false god is always has to be served that way. It all has to be conjectured. And so many people today are serving a false god. They may think they're serving Jehovah, our Jesus Christ, but they're serving a false god. And evidence of that is that they're either making up the plan or they're following someone else's. They're not listening to God's way. And so mature zeal makes sure that we do it the right way.
He preempted the excuse clause, I would say, by dumping the water all over. He kind of thought, well, what will they say when I do have the victory? He's going to say, well, it was our God's leftovers, but he took care of that by drowning it with water.
Okay. He eliminated the excuses or the false answers that could be given. Yes, and just a powerful, what a contrast between his God and their God. It wasn't just, my God did a fire and your didn't. Look at the fire that was performed or demonstrated, poured down by my God.
I think you've used this example before. If we go by the instructions whenever we're working on a project, we usually get it done faster instead of having to go back and redo it two or three times after we did it the way we think we ought to do it.
Yes, yes. Just following the pattern. And as we talked about in this class, you weren't right. We talked about the idea of sometimes we have to slow down and go fast. To just process this and make sure that we're going in the right direction. And sometimes we take a class on zeal. I just want to be zealous. I'm going to just take off. Wait a minute. Where are you going? Taking off on a trip. I'm ready to go. Let's go. Well, where are you going? Let's look at the map and let's decide where we're going in all of this. And so the frenzied activity is not necessarily zeal. And sometimes we may look, and now let's be fair about this. Some of our religious friends and neighbors that are doing it wrong, they may outshine us in zeal. Now, it may be an immature zeal, but sometimes it may be just they're just doing more than we are. And we need to be shamed for that. Again, we talked about the examples of maybe of evangelism. The Jehovah's Witnesses, the Mormons, some of them at least, put us to shame in that. Reaching out. Sometimes our religious neighbors put us to shame in their demonstrations, maybe even in their moral lives, the way that they live those things. So it's not all an immature zeal that we're seeing here. And so there are some ways in which we need to be shamed and say we need to be doing more than we're doing it the right way. We're going to follow the pattern and do it the right way, but we need to be doing more. But that doesn't always mean we have to just copy them. Elijah didn't, when it became his turn, he didn't just copy their activity and do what they did. His was very different than theirs. But he did something. And there's that contrast between mature and an immature zeal. Let's...
He was confident, too. He had assurance. He felt he was confident in what he did.
Okay, he was confident. That's a synonym for faith. But again, that confidence was in God. God could do this. God could accomplish this. And that's why he followed the pattern. But notice that he did do something. He did it the right way. He did something. He followed the pattern. It wasn't this grand demonstration of the immature zeal of the prophets of Baal. But he was doing something. And so let's not use that as a cop-out. Well, you know, we look at those people that just a frenzied, silly kind of activity. Well, that's just silly. So I'm just going to do nothing. No, that's not what Elijah did. Elijah got up when it was his turn. And he went about his business. And he accomplished something. And so it's not an either or. It's not that we're just going to do nothing or we're going to do this. That's not the contrast. The contrast is not between zeal and no zeal. The contrast should be between immature zeal and mature zeal. We need to be busy about doing things God's way and doing the will of God and the way of God. And so I thought that was a good contrast that he made there in the book, and one that I wanted to share with you. Any other thoughts about immature versus mature zeal, Rodney? Yeah.
There's one thing, if you read on through the 19th chapter, you see how discouraged that he became, even after he did it the right way and knew he had done it the right way, and yet he became very discouraged from what was going on at the time. So we need to take a little lesson from that.
Yeah. Yeah, to not be discouraged because we're outnumbered. Right. Not be discouraged because they appear to be winning. And not to buy in. Thankfully, Elijah, in his discouragement, didn't do this, but to buy into, well, we've got to do that. You know, we've got to imitate the denominations or do the other things of these other churches so that we can look like we're on fire for the Lord. You know, who are we trying to prove this to? If we're trying to prove it to man, then yeah, let's do what they're doing. But if we're trying to prove it to God, then let's do, again, follow the pattern and do it the right way. But not be discouraged when we're the only ones and we're outnumbered. It's really 850 when you take both sets of prophets that were there to one. So, okay, good points. It's not either or. It's mature versus immature zeal. All right, now lesson four starts with, we don't have much time to get into this, but we can get started, the idea of the preparing. Remember, we're still in this fire analogy, interestingly, from Elijah's story there, the fire. We're still in this fire. We remember talking about the fire triangle, the things that are essential for this. And this is building upon that seven steps that we talked about that it takes to build a fire. And the first one, remember, is to prepare. We've got to prepare the ground, to prepare the place for this fire. And so this lesson deals with that concept of preparing the place, finding this starting point. And this goes, again, back to this concept of slowing down and doing it right. We need to be careful. And again, to some part of our brain, that sounds contradictory when we say zeal but slow down and zeal and being careful. Because I think if we're honest with ourselves, a lot of times we have this concept of zeal. But we can be careful and zealous at the same time. And so we want to make sure that we're preparing this fire, that this fire is going to last. And it's going to be the type of zeal that we want. And we begin that with preparation. And he says the first step that Jesus took in preparing Peter was to prepare him. And he uses the story of Peter and the other fishermen who were unsuccessful in their fish. And then Jesus had told them to let down their nets. And this great amount of fish were caught. And when Simon Peter saw it, he fell down at Jesus' knees, saying, "Depart from me, for I am a sinful man, O Lord." There's the starting point of just realizing how unworthy we are in the face of God. That we're a sinful person, and that we're in front of a powerful, sinless God. Every Christian, he says, who wants to live with zeal, needs this kind of humble self-examination of just realizing who we are. Now, this self-examination and the realization of our sinfulness doesn't cause us to just cave in upon ourselves and just give up, but it puts it all in perspective and then hopefully, as it did with Peter and the other apostles, for us to now clear that ground, to deal with that sin, to accept the forgiveness of the sins in our lives so that we might be proper and zealous Christians. Then he talks about the problem with lukewarmness. And this is the greatest enemy to zeal. The second two, we've got two enemies. One is the idea of immature zeal, of just being zealous and heading off in some direction without any kind of purpose. But the other is just being lukewarm. And as he says, one of the problems with lukewarmness is it's deceptive. That at first glance, it looks okay. How does a lukewarm Christian look? What are some things that you can see in a lukewarm Christian that might make you think they're okay? Okay. Yeah, you're not doing something just terrible that just stands out, that everybody just gasps and look at that person. And so there's no overt evil, what we would call evil there. So that looks good. What else?
They come to Bible class on Wednesday night.
Yeah, we're here every time the door's open. And so that looks good. And now, we would say there's some level of, there's some zeal there. But remember, this is lukewarmness. There's some warmth there. And so they've eliminated all of that overt, at least the visible evil in their lives. They're here every time the doors are open. And so that's deceptive. And the greatest danger here is not that I have fooled you. It's that I fooled myself. Because, number one, you're not going to be my judge. I can't fool God. He's going to be my judge. And so the danger is not that I fooled God. I can't fool him. And the danger is not that I fooled you, but that I fooled myself. And so we're not talking about it's deceptive in the sense that you look at that person across the church building and they've deceived you that they're lukewarm. No, we're saying when we look in the mirror, we've deceived ourselves that I'm not a bad guy. I go to church. In fact, I go to church on Wednesday nights. That's how good of a Christian I am. Now, again, throw in the disclaimer there. We're not saying that's a bad thing. There's some measure of zeal there. But it may have deceived us and deceived the world that we're just not quite there. But we look good to ourselves at least. He uses, and we talked about this before, the idea of a lukewarm drink is useless. It can't warm you in the cold like a good hot coffee or hot chocolate can on a snowy cold night. It can't cool you and refresh you when you're overheated on a day like today, like a cold glass of water or lemonade would. It just has little or no impact. And the same way it is in a lukewarm Christian. But now, many times that drink in the glass can look deceptive. Can't tell by looking at it necessarily whether it's cold or hot. And in this lukewarm Christian, it's the same way. They may look okay at first glance, but they can't accomplish their God's given purpose. And so the first step in prayer, preparing ourselves, is to make sure that we understand who we are before God and understand the importance of zeal and the danger of lukewarmness. All right, we'll pick up there next time.